today is the 18th of September 2018. I'm interviewing Richard Thomas Moorhead of Havelock North on his family. Richard, would you like to tell us something about it?
Right. All right. Well, we'll start with the Moorhead side of the family. And David Moorhead arrived in Christchurch in, I'd say, the late 1800s. He wasn't on one of the first three ships, which was a bit of a shame because all the good land had been taken. So he bought a property out of Christchurch at Kalinchi near, I don't think of the names of these places. There are several little towns just out of Christchurch. Anyway, he came from Kalinchi in Northern Ireland, and the little village that eventually happened out of Christchurch was called Kalinchi. He was David Moorhead, and my grandfather Thomas was one of his sons. David created a farm out of a swamp by platting flax and putting river stones onto the flax to create a farm out of a swamp. And because of the amount of work that was involved, he actually only lived to be 38. Because I think the hard work killed him. He had several children. I'm not very up on my father's history because my father didn't speak about his family a lot. But I can tell you that my father's father was Thomas Moorhead, and he married Mary. Gosh, the names are going out the window straight away. It'll come to me shortly. He married Mary, and in 1903, Thomas moved to Hawke's Bay, where he bought a property at Tikokino, Butler Road and the Waipawa-Tikokino Road, a triangle of land which was three sections. One of those sections had been a dairy farm in the 1920s. How they survived I wouldn't know because it was straight river shingle. And then the other two blocks were better land, some very heavy land, almost peat, and some lighter red soils which were very good for growing early lambs. So Thomas obviously was a farmer. He also helped to build the wool shed, which still exists, so that was in 1903, and he built a garage on the house site. I'm not sure how much involvement he had in actually building the house, but anyway, he built a, you'd call it an old-style villa with a veranda around three sides, built to the wrong way, built to the south as they did in England, so it was very cold. But he was a lover of trees, and so he planted quite an area of deciduous English trees and other trees, which obviously over the years have developed into quite a fine arboretum. So that was Thomas, and Thomas lost his wife with cancer when she was only in her 30s. And I think possibly for this reason, and also that two of my father's brothers died early in life as barely teenagers, that maybe this was the reason that my father didn't really speak about his family, because okay. It was obviously quite a sad time. And at one stage, Thomas and family, which consisted of my father and two sisters, Hazel Lee, who married an architect in Hamilton, and Maisie, who married a Riddell. And the Riddells actually lived on Butler Road, only half a mile away from us, quite close by.
I've driven past Butler Road, but
Butler Road comes off Highway 50 at the north, just before you reach Tikokino, before you get to the hotel. The Smedley Road goes to the west to the Rangers and Smedley Station, and Butler Road comes off.
You've got Matheson Road and...
and then Smedley Road. Butler Road, you can turn off Highway 50 down Butler Road, and it comes down and does a... Butler Road comes down, and then it meets the Waipawa-Tikokino Road, and our property was literally that
exactly.
corner. And then this road, Makarora Road, goes up there. Yes, so, and at one stage, Thomas and Maisie and Hazel moved to Waipa Corral and lived in Jellicoe Street in Waipa Corral. And then, I'm not quite sure whether Mary had died or whether, they then moved to Hastings because my father went to Mahora School, primary school. Ooh. And then eventually he went on to Napier Boys High. Oh, it's really annoying me, Mary's... So Kalinchi is in Northern Ireland, and both sides of the family, Moorheads and my mother, was a Pettit, and I'll talk about her in a minute. They were originally in Scotland and then moved to Northern Ireland. And I had an extraordinary experience when I first met my present wife, Caroline, at Mangakuri Beach, where I'd never been before in my life. My first wife loved beaches. I'm not really a beach person, but anyway, Mangakuri Beach is a Williams family area. And so I went the first time to Mangapuri Beach, and it was a foul day in the middle of winter, and there were only three other people on the beach. As they came towards us, I realised that one was a Williams, a relation of Caroline's, and she had a couple with them. And she introduced me as Richard Moorhead, and these people said, "Did you say Moorhead?" And I said, "Yes." They said, "We are going to visit some Moorheads in Tasmania who came from Kalinchi in Northern Ireland." And just on that same theme, recently I was recently in the Havelock North Medical Centre for a blood test or something, and this lovely girl approached me, and I gave her my sheet with my name on it, and she said, "Moorhead, that's spelt the same way as my family." And she said, "Well, our family came from Kalinchi in Northern Ireland." And I said, "And so did mine." Quite extraordinary. Yes, and her family farmed in the Waikato. And I actually need to follow that up and try and find out some more history. Because part of the Moorhead family moved from Christchurch to Australia. And then there's a very strong family connection in Canada. In fact, there's a Moorhead University on the boundary of Canada and the United States. I think they were very strong Presbyterians and were in that a league of people who didn't believe in alcohol. What do they call themselves? Anyway, Grandfather Thomas, obviously I didn't know Mary, his wife, but Thomas was a tall man, over 6 foot tall. He died when I was about 8. Very tall, very upright, very quiet, not a lot of sense of humour, but a nice man. And I think eventually was moved into a home up on Napier Hill, and that's where he died. And I don't know a lot about his other brothers. I do have a connection with somebody called Collie Henderson, who lives here in Bay. His grandfather was Thomas's brother, but my mother tells me that one of those brothers was a bit of a blackguard, and there's all sorts of stories that we don't know whether are true or not. Anyway, he bought this property, which was named Willowbrook, and my father obviously farmed there till he was... My father, Lester Moorhead, spelled L-E-I-C-E-S-T-E-R. When he went to Napier Boys High, they couldn't be bothered with his long name. So because he came from Tikokino, they nicknamed him Tick. So he was known as Tick Moorhead. And my younger brother is named Tick after my father. So that's that. On my mother's side, my mother was a Pettit. Her father was William Charles Pettit. And his wife was Annie Mackay. And the Mackay family actually had a property just there, where Phil King, who's been prominent in agriculture, that's where he lives now. Oh, so that was a Mackay property. So my mother used to relate stories of coming from, they lived in Pettit Valley Road out of Ongaronga, and they used to come in a horse and gig from there to lunch, and it was an all-day occasion. Mm-hmm. And on one occasion when the Waipawa River was very flooded, at the last minute, as a small child, she was tossed out of whatever she was in, and somebody grabbed her before she went into the flood. And William Pettit was a complete opposite to Thomas, a very gregarious, humorous man who eventually lost the farm through betting on racehorses. But he was a character. He was the complete opposite to Thomas. And a little bit of history about him. He was one of the first vet students at Lincoln College in South Island, but sadly developed very bad health. And the doctors advised him to go on a long sea voyage for his health, and that's what he did. So he sat me on his knee as a small child and told me about his travels. And I remember vividly things like the clock tower in the square in Venice, where the figures come out and ring the bell. Yes. And when I saw it myself, I had huge... I'm getting it now. Goosebumps down my back. So he was a great character. In the Pettit family, this is where my art comes from. There were a lot of artists and singers and pianists and violinists, and my grandfather, William, could sit down. He could go to a Gilbert and Sullivan opera and come home and play the whole thing, including the overture, by ear on a piano. And that's where I learned my skill of playing. Well, that's I started playing by ear when I was quite young too. Sadly, never learned to read music, but William was an amazing pianist. So, although he was a farmer, and I don't know whether he was a good farmer or not, but it was the racehorse betting that lost the farm, sure. And that property was then owned by the Liddles, called Merivale, up the Ongar Road. So that's still Pettit Valley Road. And I think William and his wife Annie, who I never knew, she had red hair. So there's red hair through the family on several sides, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Yes, and then my mother had a brother, Jack, is known as Ginger because he had red hair. an assistant, Yoland, who never married, and spent her whole life up the east coast of North Island, up and down from Tolaga Bay right down to the Lower Wairarapa, looking after people's children. And if anybody should be sitting here relating stories of our family, it should be my aunt, Yoland. My mother went to the Onga Onga School, the old original little school, which is still there as a historic place. But her mother, Annie, died when my mother was 10. So that was all the education that my mother had, because she went, Yolan was older, and she went home to help Yolan look after their father. So that's, you know, and if you'd met my mother, you would be quite amazed. And I remember an occasion when the new vicar came to visit, and he and my mother were having a discussion at the front door, and she was talking about having my brother, Stuart, he is, now as known as Tap, christened. And there was a great debate about whether it was christened or baptised, and my mother was very determined that it was christening. He would be christened, and the vicar was saying, "No, Mrs. Moorhead, it's baptism." And as they carried on, I was standing behind listening to the conversation. There was quite a colourful vicar, this man. And he eventually said to my mother, "You're very well educated, Mrs. Moorhead." And my mother's name was Moira, so it was Tikkun Moira. And she just looked at him, because she was a very straight talker and a very, very outgoing, gregarious person again, and she was a real character, and so she dealt with people nicely in a very strong way and had all sorts of very bad sayings, and I come out with them occasionally, and my wife Caroline said, "Oh, that's another one of your mother's." And my parents had, my mother actually had, I don't know whether you want this in the story, but my mother had 9 pregnancies and only 3 of us survived. And it wasn't until my father died and we were sorting out church service arrangements and things that I discovered I had a brother, and it had never been talked about, and he had lived for 2.5 months, and he was Nicholas. And my cousin Nicholas, Nick Riddell, who's part of the family that lived up the road, his second name is Moorhead, and I think he was named after Nicholas Moorhead, who died. And until this sitting with the family talking about my father's funeral, I didn't know I had a brother called Nicholas.
Riddell's related to the Riddells of Treetira?
I'm not sure about that. The Waipakarau, I think some in the Wairarapa. Mount Herbert at Waipakarau was there.
Not a common name.
No. And they were known as Riddells for a long time, but at one stage they changed the name. So yes, and so of the 9 children, my sister Anne is the eldest, survived, and she is now 86 and is still moving cattle on a small property out of Whangarei. Lost her husband quite a long time ago. And then I'm the middle one, and then there's my brother Stuart, who was a lot younger. And so we almost grew up in not three generations, but we really grew up as younger ones. We didn't relate because there was quite a gap between us, 7 or 8 years. Yes. So I'm 78 and my sister has just turned 86, and my brother's 7 years younger than I am. And my father eventually, I think my grandfather held the reins of the farm until he was quite old. My father didn't get a chance to farm until he was, I don't know, I think probably into his 50s. But anyway, my father was a very good farmer. It was sheep and beef cattle, and he grew some winter crops for fattening lambs and for feeding up ewes before lambing. And the property was always, my grandfather loved everything to be very neat and tidy, and I can remember as a small child cutting kindling, and you could never leave outside the woodshed without getting the rake out and raking up every single little chip that was on the ground. So he was a very tidy man. So I know nothing about Mary now. Her name's coming to me. No, it will come. So from that point on, do you want me to talk more about my involvement?
Yes, your association with Tikakino or Onga Onga.
Right. Yes, well, because we only live 4.5 miles from Tikakino, my sister Anne actually rode to school through our property and through a couple of paddocks of our neighbours to Highway 50 and then to the school. And there was a horse paddock across from the school where she used to leave the horse during the day. And so she went to primary school, as did my brother Stuart, went to the Tikakino Primary School. I'm just trying to think at what age my father split the farm in two for my brother and I. So we both had around about 500 acres each, and the shingle part of the farm was balanced by the very heavy part of the farm, and then I had the other half, which included riverbed, which has a little stream called Weeks's Creek, which crosses Highway 50 as you approach Te Kākino from the south, you cross a bridge, and that's Weeks's Creek, which is a trickle and then turns into a raging torrent. And so my father built stop banks, mostly on one side of that creek to stop bad flooding. That was about 100 acres in that creek bed, which we used to put the breeding cows in. And obviously, when that flooded, we had to get the cattle out very quickly. And we grazed the breeding cows on the shingle country and eventually built it up, and it grew amazing subterranean clover, which was amazing for fattening lambs. And my father refenced everything, built wonderful implement sheds, barns, lovely new sheepyards out of totara. Oh, and part of this bottom section actually below was part of Melbourne Station, the Brow property. That part of the property was the horse paddocks of the Brow. And there was still, until a few years ago, the original totara posts and a little bit of wire from the original fencing. So that went away back.
Well, Brow, that was...
Addison and numerous other people since. From our garden, before the trees all grew up, you could actually see the Brow homestead from our garden, from Butler's Road. My father was a very good farmer, and he started the Angus cattle that we ran from a pedigree herd of heifers. So we had good stock to start with. And then he would cross them with shorthorn bulls, and he often topped the weaner fair and Waikawa. And also grew very good wool, coarse wool. The Moorheads were early clients of Dalgetty's, which was called something else before that, in Waipakarā. Anyway, Thomas was probably one of their first clients. And then we dealt with Dalgetty's for a long time, and also Williamson killed in Waipakarā. The property had one other small stream, so it was quite well watered, although this main stream was known to go dry right back to the boundary where there was a large floodgate between our property and the Butler family. And that property had been a Rathbone property originally. There's a Rathbone homestead on Highway 50, where Weeks's Creek crosses Highway 50. It goes there.
Now, your school days.
Right. My school days, I obviously went to school at Te Kākino. I was a very bad asthmatic as a child and missed a lot of school, because in those days there were no ventilators to breathe into, so you had a small white pill which you took and you coughed until you stopped. So I missed a lot of school, and this is partly the reason that I became an artist, because where I lay in bed annoying my mother, yelling out, "What can I do? What can I do?" all day, she would throw magazines and paper and pencils and crayons on the bed, and I would draw and copy and do things, and that's where I started painting. And obviously this art thing came from her father's family, where they were all like, my parents had no art ability at all. My sister can paint, but hasn't really painted for various reasons in her life. And my brother has no artistic talent at all. So that's when I started painting. And in fact, I had my first exhibition of watercolours at the Te Kākino Oddfellows Hall when I was 12. I still have some of those paintings, which I have shown once in a retrospective exhibition, and I'm intending to have another retrospective exhibition when I turn 80. So I went to the Te Kākino school. Because I'd missed a lot of school, I was put back several times, so I was probably a year and a half older than most of the pupils. I then went on to Napier Boys High as a boarder and had 4 years there, where I think I completely wasted my time. If I could have my school days all over again, I would work and be a lot more attentive and enthusiastic about things, apart from the things I really enjoyed that were English, geography, art, sport. And so I actually didn't gain a school certificate. I missed by 3 the first time and 5 the second time. But when I was chairing a Queen Elizabeth Arts Council meeting some years later, and on the regional council appointed by the Minister of Arts, I thought, well, actually, I'm all right. I've done all right.
Absolutely, of course.
So that was my education at Napier Boys High, and I do go back to the occasional Jubilee, but I'm always rather disappointed in the numbers that turn up that I know, but I have tried to keep in contact with some of those people. And I gather that Napier Boys High is a very respected school now for its quality of teaching and sport and everything else. Oh, and then part of being at Te Kākino's school was the days of the dental clinic, which I thought was a great idea. I hope they bring it back. And also on Fridays, we'd get in a bus and travel to Waipawa for manual training. That was woodwork, and the girls did cooking. And that tells you something about me, that I'm very artistic, but I'm totally impractical with carpentry tools and things. And I remember making a shoe cleaning arrangement and I don't think any of the joints met, and I've tried to fill them with plastic wood to cover up my pad, and I think I got 3 out of 10. So as far as practical things, although I managed the farm, and I did enjoy farming for the 25 years I farmed, I loved the breeding side of things, and I used to go to national bull sales and buy top quality bulls and the best rams I could find, and again, also like my father, topped the weaner fair at Waipa Corral and sold high quality wool, which I really enjoyed. But I guess I got bored with farming, and that's when I had a change a bit later on. And my only other schooling was probably through the arts, was going to weekend art workshops and things. And I tell the tale of when I was at primary school, probably when I was 12, there used to be an adult education arrangement, and there was a fellow, Norman, again, I've forgotten the name just at the moment, who arranged these classes for all sorts of things in the sort of arts and crafts world and art history and things. And he arranged a life drawing class at the Waipawa District High School. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. So off I went as a 12-year-old, thinking I was going to see a lovely nubile nude ladies. Yes, yes. And this model appeared in a full-length black swimming suit. So I was very disappointed. So that was, I guess, part of my starting to learn skills in painting. Just going back to my father went to Napier Boys High. I think he was in the first 15, a good rugby player and a very good tennis player. And he did play for Hawke's Bay, played tennis probably into his 60s. And then at about 67, he took up golf and played till he was 87. And I think played to his age a couple of times, the Flaxmere golf course. So he loved his sport. My mother wasn't sporty at all, but I do remember being shocked one day when I looked up on the tennis court and here she was having heads up with my sister. And another day I heard the piano playing, and my mother was sitting at the piano tinkering, and she became profoundly deaf when I was born and always wore hearing aids with varying abilities and proficiencies. So she was a very deaf person, but managed to cope and lip read and cope with having large numbers of people around dining room tables and things, and enjoyed people hugely. I think I'm going off track here a little bit. So father was a very good tennis player, and obviously we all started playing tennis when we were quite young, and I played in my first tennis tournament. I remember playing in the Waipawa handicap doubles with my father against Mr. Ormond and his son Bill. And that was my first introduction to playing tennis. And from then on, I played regularly, and I eventually played for Hawke's Bay as well. Played in various tennis groups, in Hawke's Bay Lawn Tennis and Hastings at the Whitehead Road Courts in Hastings, and obviously in Waipawa and Waipa Corral. And I served on various committees in the Central Hawke's Bay tennis groups, and also enjoyed playing squash in Waipa Corral, and was involved in the fundraising for the squash club. I did have a big involvement in the Waipawa Tikokino community on committees and things. My grandfather was the first president of the Tikokino War Memorial Trust, and there was a little rough cast building, tiled roof building, quite an attractive little building which sat on the main street in Tikokino. He was the first chairman of that board, and my father then went onto that board. When I left school, I was called onto that board. I think it was mainly to clean the grounds up before Anzac Day, but I did enjoy it. And that building held Tikokino Library, which the community used. And eventually, when the new hall and community centre and play centre was built on Tikokino, the plaques from the War Memorial and the library were moved into the new building. Mm-hmm. So that little building no longer exists. I do remember once planting a seed from a pine tree. The seed came from Gallipoli, and I'm not sure, I think that pine tree is still growing up near the road. So that was the first thing I did in Tikokino. I used to help with collecting for the National Party. I was chairman of the Tikokino School Committee for some time. I served on the Central Hawke's Bay District Council when a local councillor died, and I took that position. So I had, I think, 2.5 terms as a councillor with the Central Hawke's Bay District Council, which I enjoyed. I found it frustrating because I wanted things to get done, and some things did eventually get done, but I always seemed to be yelling against a brick wall. Yeah. So there was that, and obviously I did help with those sporting groups, and also joined various arts groups in Central Hawke's Bay. The Waipakara Art Group, who met in a very dingy, dark room behind the Waipakara Library. I went, and I was quite young, I probably just left high school, and was met by very grumpy group of women who didn't want a man, especially not a young man, in their painting group. So I didn't last there very long. And then I joined the Otani Arts and Crafts group at Otani and spent lovely years there because they had a very strong group of artists, some very good artists, some who trained at Canterbury School of Art, Ilam, and eventually became president there for two terms as well. And so that's where I picked up all sorts of painting skills and met all sorts of interesting people, tutors from England, and we held all sorts of workshops. So some notable New Zealand artists used to come as guest artists, and it was a very strong group, which I really enjoyed. Oh, it's horrible having to talk about yourself, but I did at one stage win a North Island Junior Doubles title in Gisborne when I went to a tournament up there. So that was a bit of a thrill. I remember getting a piece of paper. There was no trophy or monetary gain at all, unlike today's tennis players who win these ridiculous amounts of money and behave badly. So sport has been very much part of my life as well as my art. So I'm a bit of a contradiction. Having been a farmer and an artist and a sportsman, I have a whole lot of different roles I play.
I think they make a very interesting mix, actually. Yes. They all complement one another.
Yes. And after 25 years farming, I then decided I was getting bored with it because the property was highly developed and I had pushed the stock numbers to as high as I could possibly get them. And I decided I was getting bored and I needed something else to do. And it just so happened that because I was involved with the Arts Council and community arts and things, a certain Kenneth Cotman, whose family were noted watercolourists in England, arrived out in New Zealand to do a lecture tour. And would I help organised this tour for him, and could he come and stay? So this man, who was in his 70s at this stage, came down on a bus from Auckland. He got off the bus with a leather satchel full of tapes. He'd been listening to music, and he was an extraordinary man. He'd been a window dresser at Selfridges. He was an artist himself, but his grandfather, John Sell Cotman, is one of the noted watercolourists from the Norwich School of Painters in England. And he had other relatives who were very good artists. So he came to stay and became quite a friend. And it was at this point where I was agonising over what I was going to do with my life. So I was in my 50s. And he said, well, what do you want to do? He said, you have to be doing something you're enjoying. And I said, well, I love gardening. And my parents developed a large garden. Amongst the large trees that grandfather planted, my mother and father then created a very large garden of about 2.5 acres of hundreds of roses and perennial borders and sunken gardens and rockeries and all sorts of things. So I learnt a lot about gardening, not the botanical names or anything, but the actual skill of planting and enjoying trees and shrubs and flowers very much as a child. And I suddenly decided I thought I'd like to be a garden designer. And so Kenneth Cotman stood in front of me and said, right, Richard, next week, off you go and start this new career. And I started while we were still farming at Tikokino. And I also developed a range of metal garden furniture, there's some behind you, and some garden structures, pergolas, archways, garden furniture, which was called More Art, and my business was called More Art Garden Design. I started on that from Tikokino. And then when Gay and I moved, my first wife, Gay, I want to talk about her. She was Gay Smith, who came from Omarkery, her parents, Howard and Dawn Smith. And Howard Smith was one of the James Smith's family from Wellington, who owned the big department store. There were four brothers. Howard was one of those brothers, and his other brother, Robert, also moved to Omarkery. The other two brothers stayed on in the store in Wellington. So Gay was the eldest child of Howard and Dawn Smith. From Omarkery, Dawn was a Bousfield family, I think came from Gisborne. Oh, it's coming to Havelock North. So Gay and I moved to Havelock North about 20 years ago. And after, did I tell the story about the house now?
Yes.
After looking at some 55 houses, somewhere to live, we found a lovely house in Havelock North and had an option on it for 10 days. And we absolutely loved it. It's a lovely site and had a beautiful garden. But we looked at each other and thought, why are we buying another big garden? We had this big garden at Tikokino, which we opened to the public for many years, from September when the daffodils were out. I forgot to mention that. My mother bought bulbs from Sir Heaton Rhodes out of Christchurch to start this vast area of daffodils. And one of my mother's aunts marry the Rhodes, so there was a family connection. And then Auntie Aggie Rhodes, he actually bought a property at Ongaronga called Spring Hill. That was where they were. Spring Hill Station is there. It's changed hands a couple of times since. But they went to live in Victoria in Australia. And the property they owned was interesting because it was on the coast and they had merino sheep, which obviously suffer from very bad foot rot if they're on good country. But they had an island off the coast, and when the tide was low, they used to walk the sheep, the mob, across in the low tide and put them on the island for a while their feet mended, and then went back again. It's one of my mother's stories. Rhodes family owned a lot of property in New Zealand, in Wairarapa and all over the place. There were several brothers. And I think there's a connection to the man in South Africa.
Yes.
His statue has been removed from Oxford University, yes, or something. I don't know the full story there. My mother talked fondly of Albert and Aggie Rhodes at Spring Hill, and particularly when her mother died, that family were very kind, very good to her, I think. And we have one piece of furniture from the Rhodes family, which my daughter owns now. It's a early Victorian nursing chair with a beautiful carved back, which has been well looked after by my daughter. So Gay and I moved to Havelock North, and obviously I started my business, and I had an office in a shop called Chelsea Court in Havelock North, which sold interior and garden objects, and that's where I had my design office. And from the moment I started that, I used to do about 100 gardens a year, a lot from scratch, but also renovating gardens and helping people with their plantings and design and what have you, which I really enjoyed. And I've only just recently given that up. I still do some on-site discussion with people.
Just where was Chelsea Court?
It was on the Havelock Hastings Road, where there was a little... It became an alteration shop. There was a little cafe in front that sold pies and things, which has been closed for quite a long time. Next door to Tumors. And it was a lovely shop. And then from Chelsea Court, I eventually moved and had an office at the Green Door Nursery on the Hastings Havelock North Road. I had an office at the back of the nursery, and my clients used to meet me there, and I used to sell an awful lot of plants for the Green Door Company, because I'd take people around and show them what they should be buying. And I also dealt with them and other nurseries when I was buying product to put in people's gardens. So that was something I really loved, and I still have contact with a lot of those clients still.
Well, you were there when John Purdy was.
Yes, and Debbie Knott, who used to work. I haven't seen them for a while. My wife Gay was very good at flower arranging and used to do a lot of work for private clients in central Hawke's Bay and all around Hawke's Bay, weddings and parties and things. She had an amazing skill. And then when she came to Havelock North, she worked for Debbie Knott, which was a great thing for her. She had some skills. She learnt upholstery, loved her gardening. She was a keen tennis player and also played golf at the Ongaronga Golf Course, which my grandfather had some connection with, because he planted the trees that are around the oval, and some of the trees around the golf course were planted by my grandfather, William Pettit. So there's a connection. So obviously when I came to Havelock North, I decided I should join one of the art groups here, and I became a member of the Kaibaranga Arts and Crafts Group, which I'm still very much part of. I'm president of the artist group, I'm on the rebuild committee, and I'm also on the board of the Kaibaranga Arts and Crafts. Very involved there still. The new building is in process. The rebuild and the new build have started after 2 years, and so that's an exciting project. Back when I was still farming, I went to an arts conference in Lower Hutt, I think it was, and because I got up and spoke about some ideas I had about arts and crafts and how it could be promoted, I was then appointed by the then Minister of the Arts to the Regional Arts Council, which was an area from Gisborne to Nelson, Marlborough in the South Island. And I used to attend meetings every 2 months in Wellington. And of course, that was a great joy, because I was meeting interesting artistic people in all fields of the arts and crafts. Sure. And made a lot of very good friends and enjoyed that very much. And through that, I became chairman of the Hawke's Bay Central and Southern Community Arts Council, and have had a lot of involvement in things there. I was able to get the Dannevirke Art Club their own rooms and helped get grants for various arts organisations and individuals in Hawke's Bay. So that was a really good time, and I spent 2.5 terms, probably about 5 or 6 years on the Regional Arts Council. And as I said earlier, I was called in to chair the Queen Elizabeth Arts Council meeting a few times because they thought I had interesting things to say and somebody wasn't there to take the meeting. But that was wonderful, because at lunchtimes, various people who are now very well-known, iconic artists would come for lunch, and you would meet them, and that was fantastic. So that was a great part of my life. I've continued with my tennis. I still play tennis, so I'm very lucky. I played a lot of squash when I left school and also badminton. And the squash, two carloads of us used to meet in Waipawa and drive to Napier and play in the old original squash courts, which were the old reservoir up on the Napier Hill.
Yes.
And then I have to say, I don't know whether I want this recorded, but we used to drink quite a lot of beer and then drive back to Waipawa.
That was quite normal, I'd
say. Yes, it was. So I really enjoyed squash, but I also enjoyed badminton. And badminton was played in all the little halls and church halls around the Central Hawke's Bay area. Hātūma, Takapau, Porongahau, Otani, Waipawa, Tikokino. And in fact, the Birdwood Gallery out on Middle Road is the old school hall from St. Peter's in Waipawa, where I played badminton. It is now the home base for Birdwood Gallery at Middle Road. So I walk in there and think, ah, yes, I've had some fun here. I did play B-grade badminton, and so used to come to the building as you approach Hastings, the big gymnasium, whatever it was called there.
YMCA.
YMCA building. I used to come and play in tournaments and matches there, which I enjoyed. When I was at Navy Boys High, I was a keen table tennis player. It was a good reason to get out of school, and we used to go after prep out to various places and play table tennis, which I enjoyed. And we used to have a table tennis table in the wool shed at Tikokino, which we used on wet days occasionally.
Coming back to when you originally met Gay and then
you had your children.
Yes,
so Gay and I actually met at a wedding party, and my artistic eye, possibly, she had an amazing hat, and I think I fell in love with the hat, and then I fell in love with Gay. And as happens, I think because we were in that area, I think we probably went to a lot of parties together but didn't actually meet or click until that moment. And so we had a wonderful wedding out at Tamanuri Station, where Hard and Dawn lived, for a very large number of people. Yes, so Gay and I lived at Willowbrook. We did talk about the old house. As I said, it was very cold because it faced the wrong way. But my mother did some quite good alterations. She loved interiors and antiques and things, and built up an amazing collection of furniture and bits and pieces. It was one of her joys to go to the McKerney's sales in Hastings and bid up largely for all sorts of things. My mother never held a checkbook, so she had to speak very kindly to father about what she'd bought. And at one stage, we had a large manure shed with bag manure in it. And I found a table in the corner of the manure shed with a tarpaulin over it. And I said to my mother, "What's that table out in the shed?" She said, "I haven't told Tick about that one yet." And it happened that one of the legs had a bit of borer in it, and she was too embarrassed to tell him that she'd bought a table that had borer in it. But that table is still, it's been repaired, and it's in the family somewhere. So Willowbrook was a real family home. Some of the verandas that grandfather originally created were included into some of the bedrooms, so they had different ceiling heights and things to bring some sun into the rooms. And Gay and I actually altered the kitchen, which was on the west side of the house, and opened it up for the afternoon sun. My mother built a beautiful large terrace along the front of the house, which faced the tennis court, which was originally grass and then eventually asphalt, and then eventually sealed with pink sand from Auckland Harbour, which was a lovely surface to play on because it looked attractive in the winter because of the colour, and it was a good surface. And that was used by everybody in the district, and there were always, my father had many tennis parties, and Gay and I had many tennis parties, and lots of girls, friends of Gay's, used to come for tennis days and things, and the children all endured that, whether they were kicking a football, riding a pedal car, or learning to ride in bicycles. And the tennis court's still there. So the house still had some walls, even when we left, it still had some walls on scrim, many layers of paint over wallpapers and things, but some of it had been modernised. My mother put in a lovely new bathroom. And originally the wash house, as it was called, was out across from the back door out in the orchard. Yes, so the garden, my mother and father created this rather large garden, and Gay and I then took it on and, as I said, had it open to the public. And we went from, the first year we had 3 buses, the next year we had 30 buses. So it was a lot of work. So we came to Havelock North and obviously slotted into the lovely surroundings in Havelock North, and I had my garden design business and Gay had her friends and family. Some still in the Central Hawke's Bay, but she eventually had a sister who moved to Havelock North and brothers who were still farming at Amakri. And then, sadly, 16 years ago, Gay developed bowel cancer and eventually died of cancer, which was a huge shock to us all. And then a few years later, in my miserable state, great friend said to me, we're going on a trip to Europe. You've got to come. You need to get out of it and move. And I love travel because, oh, I'm going backwards again, when we were 12, the only overseas trip my parents did was a month in Australia. And because we were all tennis mad, we went to the Davis Cup tennis in Sydney. And we stayed in and around Sydney for a month, and it treks into the Blue Mountains and up the Hawkesbury River. And I was a 12-year-old, and I was busy sketching then, and I can't find it, but I do have a little notebook with biro pen drawings of bats hanging in the tree outside where we stayed. So I was busy drawing at that stage, and we had a wonderful month away. My younger brother, Tick, or Stuart, was left behind with Aunt Yolden, but four of us went off and had this lovely, and I remember very embarrassing having to wear a suit, a grey suit. It did have short trousers, but in those days people dressed up, and so when we went out for dinner at smart hotels in Sydney or other places, I was dressed up in this little grey suit with a tie. How times have changed. So that was the extent of my parents' travel, and I always regret the fact that they never got to Europe, because my mother obviously adored everything English and European, the art, the music, the interior design and all that stuff. Sadly, they never got there. And my father was a very keen follower of cricket, and when we were foot-rotting sheep in the wool shed for some weeks, we literally foot-rotted every sheep, because in those days you had foot-rot and you didn't cull the foot-rotty ones, you just kept them going. And he and my brother would have this cricket on, and I was not a cricket fan, and this radio would be blaring all day with the cricket tests and all that. Anyway, a few years ago, my eldest son married a girl in Melbourne, and I had the joy of being taken to the MCG. I was taken into the Holy of Holies to see all the wonderful relics and memorabilia that they hold there, and I thought, this shouldn't be me, it should be my father. So again, I had very happy times here, and then I eventually decided to go on this trip to Europe, because I had had a taste of travel, having been to Australia when I was 12, and remembered all of that vividly. So off I went to England. I travelled via the east and took 3.5 weeks to get to England. I travelled on my own because most of my friends had already done the Big OE. So I stopped off in various places, Singapore, Bangkok, Delhi in India, Beirut, Athens and Rome, and then eventually on to London, where I was met by some friends, settled myself in a little B&B in Chelsea. And I had an amazing 8.5 months touring around Ireland, Scotland, England and Europe. When I went on this trip with this small group of friends after Gad died, it was lovely to be with this group of people. And I had stayed with a New Zealand girl who was married to an Englishman. She'd come from Aumakri, and her parents were staying. And I was to fly from Rome to London. And as I left the house, Sheila Lethbridge, whose family, Lethbridge's farm at Aumakri, and still have a property there, Sheila gave me a letter for Caroline Ingle, this person who I'd never met. And when I got onto the bus in Rome at the start of our trip around France and Italy, I asked Ros Harker from Havelock North, who was taking tours to Europe at that side, who was Caroline Ingle, because I knew quite a few people on the bus, but I'd never met Caroline Ingle. And so I had the letter in my hand from Sheila Lethbridge, and I walked down the bus and said, "Good morning, Caroline, you've got mail." And that was how I met my now wife, Caroline. And then eventually realised that when we came back and eventually were sort of dating and things, that this is the house that she had bought, and this is the house where Gay and I nearly lived.
Isn't that amazing?
And it was very funny. Another lovely story was that I was doing all this landscaping at the time, and at the time I just happened to be working on a neighbouring property just two houses away from here, and there's those agapanthus along the drive, and Caroline was here by herself, and my friends that I'd been touring with were really pushing this thing that was going on, you see, and thinking it was wonderful, and come on, Richie, and all the rest of it. And Caroline tells the story of suddenly there was this man who kept popping his head up above the agapanthus, and so she came out the front door one day and she said, "Is that you, Richard? Would you like a cup of coffee?" And so we're back to sort of more present day things. Yes, my family, my children.
Yes.
Well, they're obviously all my children, James, the oldest, Caroline and Hamish, born 2 years apart. James has lived in Australia for 20 odd years. He was on his way to Europe to do a wine master's and met a girl and didn't get any further. And has three lovely family there and a lovely wife. runs a big shop fitting business, which is a family business, and he's very involved in the design side. So when you go into Melbourne CBD, he can point out numerous buildings where he's been involved with iron, steelwork, aluminium, you name it, sure. And refurbishing hotels and restaurants and God knows what. Also racecourse buildings, and has provided aeroplanes and cars for firefighting groups to use for fire practice. That's one of the things he got into. Mm. And also some refurbishment of railway engines. Right. So he's got a very wide range of skills in that. And so he's there in Melbourne. My daughter Caroline is married to Stephen Short, and he has a building construction company. He was farming in the Rangitiki and gave that up and bought part of a fencing contact business, and then got into the building industry and has Short Construction, and also is now the owner of the Versatile franchise for Hawke's Bay, and is currently at a conference in Adelaide.
Right.
And my daughter Caroline did her nursing in Palmerston North and now works at Royston Hospital, which she thoroughly enjoys, and has been very involved in Havelock North fundraising for Havelock Primary, Havelock Intermediate. She's been on the Brains Trust committee raising money, very involved, and has taken after her father in that regard. And then there's Hamish, the youngest, who did his landscape architecture degree course at Lincoln College and has a very successful business. Was based in Wellington, now based in Carterton, where he's just recently built a beautiful new home. He works all over the country and in Australia doing landscape design, and was also involved in a TV program some years ago. He's a very high profile, so I'm very proud of him. And the property here at Kaponga Road is a half an acre in size, so still quite a lot of gardening goes on, but I am finding that it's not as easy as it was. Mm. And we are looking to downsize, and so at the moment I think I'm gardener number 4.
Well, it's perfect. It's north facing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I could tell you a lovely story, but well, my wife, having married an Englishman and lived in England for 30 odd years, then coming back to New Zealand and settling here again, travels to Europe a lot, and I have been with her a lot. She goes most years to see her daughters and grandchildren in England, West Sussex, and I obviously go when I can. So sometimes when we go away, we get somebody to come and house sit just to keep an eye on the property. We find it's quite a good thing if you're away to have somebody here to keep an eye on things and keep things working. So on one of our trips before we went, we interviewed a lady somebody had suggested, and I think I had met her. She was a very quiet, retiring person. Anyway, we arranged for her to come at 10 o'clock one morning to meet, and my wife said, well, let's meet in the study, which is a little room next door where my wife has her desk and have some chairs, and it's a lovely spot in the morning. So she said, let's go in there, we'll talk to her in there. So there are 3 chairs, and we sat down, and she sat in a chair away from the window, and we talked about what was required and could she cope and all the rest of it, and gave her all the bits and pieces. And then suddenly she stood up and walked over to the window, because she had mentioned about who would be mowing lawns and things like that, you see. Anyway, she, and you'll excuse my language, but she walked over to the window and she said, oh shit, because she realised what a large garden we had. And to hear this very reserved, quiet woman come out, we were just hysterical. It was very funny. So we've, yes, over the years we've had numerous people to come and house sit while we've been abroad, but I think that was a particularly funny moment. And my wife Caroline has a great interest in gardening. She's in charge of the vegetable garden. And this garden was established when she bought here, and I have added and removed some things, and we have had it open to the public for fundraising events. Caroline is very involved with an art history group who meet here regularly, and she plays mahjong, and she played croquet for a long time at the croquet grounds on Napier Road. Yes. Until her back gave in. So yeah, we're involved in the Havelock scene. We've been also members of what is now called the Art Society, which came from England, the Decorative Fine Arts Society. I was on the initial committee to start that 5 years ago, and that has got a huge membership, and they have 8 or 9 lectures a year. Wonderful lecturers who come from England on all sorts of arts and crafts related things. So that's a very nice thing we're involved with, and we enjoy the cafe culture of Havelock North. Caroline's always had dogs, and we have a new dog at the moment and a new cat, and so that keeps us busy. And we just enjoy all our friends and family that are here and abroad, and are very fortunate.
Well, Caroline has some children.
Yes.
Where are they?
So Caroline has three children. Her eldest daughter, Victoria, lives in England. She's not married. And then her younger daughter, Henrietta, is married with three children who are at boarding school stage. And then there is Alexander, who lives here in Havelock North and is currently the manager of the Red Current warehouse, which deals with all the stores all around New Zealand, and has a property. She lives in St George's Road.
Well, that's lovely. Well, thank you, Richard, for sharing with Hawke's Bay. But no, it's important because, you know, you're a reasonably high-profile person in Hawke's Bay.
And the only other thing I haven't related is when you get to more senior years, you seem to spend a bit of time going to funerals. And when I turned 70, I decided that I would have a large party, because when you go to funerals, you see people you never see any other time of the year. And so I decided I would have a large birthday party with all my friends and connections to celebrate on a happy occasion. So I hired the courtyard at the Opera House in Hastings, and we had a Mamma Mia party with the film playing and the music playing. And I had about 170 people. And those included my family, my farming friends, my tennis friends, my arty friends, and my landscaping friends, and my Havelock friends. And we had a wonderful, wonderful
what
party.
What a wonderful backdrop, Mamma Mia.
And it wasn't stated as a dress-up party, but I didn't recognise some of my friends in their wigs and get-ups. So it was a lovely, lovely party. And I'm planning a similar thing for my 80th. I've got a theme and everything already. So.
Thank you, Richard.
All right. Because my mother at 96 eventually ended up in Jowett Hospital for the last 3 months of her life, I decided, because I played the piano by ear and have done since I was quite small, I would go and play for the residents of Jowett on a Wednesday before their evening meal. And there were lovely staff there when my mother was there. And in fact, not so very long ago, one of the staff who's still there said, "Do you remember when your mother flooded three rooms? She had turned a tap on in the basement and forgotten it and flooded three rooms." So this is an amazing number of stories about my mother.